Okay, hello everyone. I'm Sigurd Jone Gabrielsen, Credit Research Analyst at Fearnley Securities. Welcome to Capital Link's Shipping Sector Webinar Series. Today we will be discussing the latest trends, opportunities, and outlook on the container shipping market. And we have with us Mr. Evangelos Katsis, CFO at Danaos Corporation, Mr. Adam Katsambis, Chief Commercial Officer at Euroseas, Mr. Thomas Lister, CEO at Global Shiplease, and Mr. Moritz Fuhrmann, co-CEO and CFO at MPC Container Ships. And the webinar will feature a roundtable discussion with our panelists, followed by a Q&A session, which will run for approximately 45 minutes. Participants may submit questions at any time using the Q&A button on the webinar platform. We will do our best to address them during the Q&A segment. Please note that questions should focus only on the container shipping sector. Please also note that these webinars are for informational and educational purposes only and do not constitute investment advice or any other form of advice. And lastly, this webinar is being recorded today, Tuesday, 2nd of December, 2025, and will be available later as an on-demand replay. All right, so let us begin with the current situation in the container shipping markets. The time charter markets keep being very strong and has been so for at least 1 year or so, and we see forward fixing of vessels way into next year and even 2027. The box rates, however, they have developed a bit softer. So, Evangelos, would you like to comment or on what you're seeing in the market, and in your opinion, why is the charter market so strong right now?
Well, it's as a factual matter, what you're saying is correct. We see people, charterers, very keen to fix vessels ahead of time. Actually, at this point, we are almost at 100% charter cover for next year, and north of 75% for 2027. And I need to check my historicals a bit, but I don't recall having been in such a place any prior December, looking out 2 years. So people are keen to fix forward more than a year, actually, even in some instances for new builds that we have recently done, people fix out 3 years forward. And they fix for periods of between 5 to 10 years. So, and all that activity is done at what I would call healthy rates, at least rates that justify the investment one needs to make in these vessels. At the same time, of course, freight rates are not as strong as they were previously. And this is a function, okay, there is some seasonality effect to it on the one hand, but there always is seasonality. But on the other hand, in certain instances, freight markets and charter markets don't always go hand in hand. So if you have liners, for example, trying to secure capacity to have slots available to transfer boxes, and the box market is not that strong, you will see them on the one hand trying to secure the tonnage to maintain market share, and on the other hand, exactly because they have to fill up these ships, box rates go down. This is at this point, this is not worrying us, because we're talking about, at least the customers that we deal with, and they're not that many, to be honest. They're very well capitalized, a lot of liquidity from all these bonanza years they've had, and we believe we're in a very good place, both in terms of credit assessment of our counterparties. All of us are fixed for a number of years, so we have considerable backlog. So this is all, a pretty good situation at this point. And we can talk about our outlook on the market. I don't want to take up all the time, when the question comes up.
Sure. Thanks. Thanks. Okay. Let's move on. Adam, what do you think is happening to freight rates? Do you agree with Evangelos? Are we looking at the liners maintaining market share?
Of course, Mr. Hadjis is very experienced in the market and then now has great exposure. So certainly we see the same things. We see a divergence between the freight and the higher rates, as we've been saying for almost a year now. The freight rates that we see coming down are mostly the east, concern mostly the east-west trades of the big liners, while the higher rates concern more non-operating owners who charter the ships to the liners. So we're talking about the big ships versus the small ships, I think, here. And on the big ships, we have a plentiful supply and a big order book coming. On the smaller ships, we have a lack of candidates and certainly a lack of efficient candidates. This is something that the liners have come to realize in the last few months, I think. And especially the European liners have been more aggressive to move and secure tonnage forward. Like Mr. Hadji said, we're fixing 2 or 3 years out new buildings, and the periods have come up to, I would say, a minimum of 3 years. Up to 10 years, which we haven't seen for a long, long time. And so the market is changing. I think certainly the fact that the MSC and CMA have come in very aggressively and bought a big number of ships, over 600 ships have been taken out of the market by these two liners. And what is left for the rest is apparently not enough. And the non-operating owners are realizing now more and more, and we see a great surge in ordering in the feeder sector by the non-operating owners. And we'll see how all that plays out.
Thank you. And what it's how do you think the near term is looking, and what can we expect as we are heading into 2026?
The near term is obviously looking good for their non-operating owners. The Chinese New Year is coming up. The intra-Asian trades are quite firm. China's exports are increasing. On the near term, we're not worried. Medium to long term, we'll have to see how all the market inefficiencies play out against the big order book that is going to
Definitely.
come
And
in.
Moritz, can I have you commenting on the same? What do you see for your segments?
Yeah, sure. We are we are. I mean, it's a balance for us between obviously being quite constructive on the short term for obvious reasons, but then remaining a cautious mid to long term outlook. And the cautiousness, I must admit, we had for the past 3 years, and we've been proven wrong. And obviously, main reason being the still what we see the rerouting around the Cape of Good Hope that obviously adds to the artificial demand. We have all seen the news by the liner companies based on the at least the ceasefire announcement to start planning going through the Suez Canal again. When that will take place, no one knows. At least the planning is being done, but no one is really pulling the trigger. So that's why we're quite constructive on the short term. But what obviously helps, and especially from a feeder perspective, and for us feeders, anything between 1 to 6, maybe up to 8,000 TEU, is that you have a very healthy underlying demand, irrespective of what's happening around the Suez Canal and the Cape of Good Hope. In particular, looking at the Indian subcontinent, but also sub-Saharan Africa, we have seen year-over-year growth rates between 15 to 25%. Admittedly, coming from a lower base relative to the established mainline trades, but from that perspective, we're quite constructive, and that constructiveness also stretches into the supply side. And we just heard a comment around increasing order book also in the feeder segment. But we are still of the opinion not, not sufficient to sort of make up for the positive demand outlook that we see in the sub-segment, and also coupled with the fleet profile of the trading fleet, which is certainly overaged and will certainly become more overaged if we go ahead the next 2 to 3 years. So from that perspective, we're quite constructive. And that is also, I think, a reflection of the current momentum that we see in the chartering market. Also to your earlier question around, forward fixing, etc.
Right. Thank you very much. Okay, Thomas, can I have some your view on what you're seeing in the market? And also, congratulations on your recent Tesla acquisition. Would please also, if you share some detail on the rationale.
Of the latest acquisition. Sure. So first of all, a few words on Global Ship Lease for those on the call who are not familiar with who we are and what we do. We are an owner of container ships. We own roughly 70 ships, mid-size and smaller container ships, by which I mean container ships below 10,000 TEU. So it's a very similar sector to the ones occupied by the other panelists. We've got a market cap of roughly 1.3 billion. We're listed on the New York Stock Exchange. We pay a dividend yield of 7% at current pricing. And this last point will be more relevant really to the sort of the market commentary. We've got roughly $2 billion in forward contracted revenues over the next 2.5 years. So essentially we, and by the sounds of things, the other panelists also, are very well insulated from what may be a volatile time in the liner sector over at least the next couple of years. The only things that I would add to, what has already been said is really the following. Not only is there appetite for new building ships, as the other guys have mentioned from the liner operators, but we're also seeing older ships, and in our case, ships of even 25 years old or more, being forward fixed for 2, 3, 4 years. So that only goes to underline the sort of the appetite that there is in the liner sector, despite there being downward pressure on freight rates. And I think that's as a result of various things. First of all, scarcity value. I mean, there's very little tonnage coming available in the charter market at the moment. All of us on this panel have all our 25 positions fixed, pretty much all of our 26 positions fixed, and much of our 27 positions fixed. So, if a line wants a ship, they've got to pay up for it and they take it. And the other is disruption. The dynamic between China and the US has added an extra level of volatility and unpredictability to what is always a cyclical and volatile industry. And I think the liner operators see having capacity as having optionality. It allows them to react to the changing dynamics of the industry, which is why they continue to have appetite to pull in ships from the charter market. Now, coming back to your question about our recent acquisition, and again for the benefit of listeners, we've just acquired 3 8,500 TEU container ships built 2010 and 11 with charters attached at a deeply discounted price. We've acquired three effectively for the price of one. And the reason that we have been able to acquire such cheap ships in today's environment is that the charters themselves are below market, which means that if you're buying ships with charters attached, it also allows you to buy the ships themselves at substantially below market rates. The rationale for the transaction is okay, there are charters on these ships which are going to run out for 2 or 3 years if the charterers hold on to them. But these are really the cash cows of the future. So we're looking to bed in newer assets. I mean, for us, 2011, 2010 vessels are comparatively new. They're an attractive size, and we see, as I've already said, consistent demand for these vessels in the market. So we see them as highly value generative assets going forward, and we'll bed them in on the back of our existing 2.5 years of forward contracted cover. So it's a nice deal as we see it. Low risk, high upside.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Okay, so I want to cover some questions about the order book and also the new building market. So there's a lot of ground to cover here. But first, we should talk a little bit about the Red Sea situation. The Red Sea crisis has lasted for more than 700 days now, and there are, I guess, only a few liners sailing through, and those are escorted by Navy ships, as far as I know. And the Suez Canal authorities, they're losing massive amounts of canal fees. So, Evangelos, I guess not the easiest question, maybe, but when will it end? And what will it take to get there? I think you're on mute, Evangelos.
Sorry. The honest answer is I don't have a crystal ball, so I have no idea. And look, I mean, this at some point this is going to end, right? And when I say at some point, I'm not referring to the distant future. I believe that 2026 will be a year that Suez will normalize. So gradually vessels will eventually stop going around, and this will reduce, of course, ton miles. On the flip side, there are mitigants to this. We expect vessels to slow down. We've actually seen vessels not only having to go around, but also speed up in the process to catch up with schedules. So there is a mitigant in terms of the effective supply, if you wish, which is slowing down. And in the broader demand supply environment, even if that means a softening in the charter market, as Tom mentioned earlier, and this is true for all of us, I believe, on this panel, we do not stand to be affected by weaker charter market because we're fixed. For the next, I mean, we have Danaos has a backlog of 4.1 billion at this point, with an average duration of 4 years. So, if anything, a market softening will be an opportunity for us to reinvest in the business, right? Because our top line is going to be consistent. But at the same time, you will see, and I'm also touching upon a bit the demand supply situation. And also the order book, you will see older vessels that will exit the fleet. There are a lot of older ships that, of course, they're now being fixed at very good rates. But as soon as they open up, if they open up in a softer market environment, I have no doubt in my mind that they will head for the scrapyard. So there, we have a few things going towards, let's say, supporting an argument of a soft landing, if you wish, even if the market normalizes. And I believe the Suez Canal reopening will cause such an effect, but I believe that it will not materially affect earnings in the industry.
All right,
So
thank
good.
you.
Could I just add a couple of comments to what Evangelos has just said? As he rightly says, going around the Cape of Good Hope has absorbed quite a lot of effective capacity. We calculate that roughly 10 to 11% of effective capacity has been absorbed by that diversion. However, it's worth noting that that is primarily the bigger ships. Why? Because it was the bigger ships on the east-west arterial trades, particularly Far East to Europe, that were passing through Suez before the Red Sea was disrupted and are thus being diverted around the Cape of Good Hope. Meantime, the mid-size and smaller ships upon which all of us are focused, are very few of them are actually going around the Cape of Good Hope. I mean, it's just a handful of vessels in our fleet that periodically pass around the Cape of Good Hope. So I think that the reopening of the Red Sea and Suez, when it eventually happens, is going to be disproportionately influential on the bigger ships. And I question the degree to which it's really going to disrupt the dynamics in the mid-size and smaller ship segments. But, to echo Evangelos's point, all of us have charter cover. So if there were to be a correction to the downside, which would put downward pressure on charter rates and asset values, then that's when we all go shopping ships, right? On the other hand, if there is no disruption, well, we continue to fix into a firm charter market. So it's a little bit heads we win, tails we win, at the moment, at least. I'll pass the call back to you. Sorry for jumping in.
No, that's fine. And thank you also for the 10 to 11% capacity that being absorbed. That's one of my questions. And Adam, do you agree with that number? I mean, I've also heard up to 16%, but I guess that is on the wider container space, as Thomas says, and not specifically on the smaller vessels. What do you think, Adam?
No, the figures I've heard also are between 10 and 12%. So very much agree with everything Mr. Lister says, that the smaller ships will have much less of an impact when the traffic is restored. Of course, we've in this industry we've learned of the concept of cascading, and charters will try to adapt and rationalize, but there's also barriers to how much this can happen. Now, as far as the restoration of the normality in the Red Sea transit goes, I think it's going to be a very slow process. We have a peace between two parties that have been at war with each other as long as anybody alive can remember, and it's a very fragile peace with violations from both sides continuously. We saw a sort of step back from the US in the process. They're not as involved as they were up to the summer. And that creates a very fragile situation. Nobody knows how it's going to play out. Nobody knows when we'll come back to normality, but we know for sure that this is going to be a slow process. It's going to take quarters. It's not going to take weeks or months. And the underwriters will have, I think, the final word here, because until the underwriters feel that it's safe, I don't think anyone will dare to go ahead, especially the main liners who control the big ships that normally go through there.
Thank you. And we might even see some congestion maybe in a transition period. What do you think? How will a reopening of the Red Sea pan out?
The congestion will come to
Sorry,
some.
if I may, I'm just going to throw that over to Moritz so that we may mix it up a little bit. Sorry.
Okay, sorry.
No worries.
Worries. Thanks, Sigurd. Based on our expectation, it's going a gradual process, because the liner companies have taken a long time adjusting to what has been new normality for the past quarters. In terms of network planning, and that goes also the different direction. So, if the liner company's assessment is that the security situation around the Red Sea is fine, then they will also sort of need sufficient planning, making sure, and echoing the term congestion, avoiding congestion, especially in the European ports, and we already have congestion. You don't want to make it worse. So there will be a very careful planning. By the liner companies, especially around speed of execution of using the Suez Canal again. So, as usual, there will probably be a fundamental implication on the market, and there will always be a sentiment-driven implication on the market. And we believe the sentiment we already see, because the freight rates are following a negative trajectory for quite some time now. So at least for us, that's sort of the priced in sentiment that you usually have. Interestingly, you know, looking back a couple of weeks, when there was the ceasefire announcement, there was no to little reaction, I think, on both stock prices of us and our co-panelists here in discussion, but also on the financial market side, being the freight rates. So you haven't seen a sharp drop off based on the announcement. So that's why we believe it will be taking some time. My personal take is that we will not see a meaningful rerouting within the next 6 to 9 months. But that's just me. That's just me personally assessing the situation.
All right, thank you. So I guess next question to Thomas, and that will be on the order book. I mean, the order book is at a high level. I think we can all agree on the container shipping space with more than 30% of the fleet. So if we add, as you say, 10 to 12% maybe capacity absorbed by the Red Sea situation, considering the vessels that you have now just acquired, do you think these will be recontracted upon expiry of their current charters, or do you think they will be scrapped?
We believe they will be recontracted. So I think there are a handful of important points to make here, Sigurd. First of all, when you talk about the container ship fleet and when you talk about the container ship order book, it's not a homogeneous whole. So you have the really big ships, the equivalent in aviation terms to the A380s, which are 24,000 TEU, and they're deployed on the big east-west arterial trades. Strategic assets for the liner operators. And then you've got, trickling down to the mid-size and smaller ships, which are super operationally flexible assets, which are effectively the sub 10,000 TEU ships. And the dynamics of those two segments are very, very different in nature, number one. And number two, the composition of the order book for those two segments is very, very different too. So the order book is disproportionately weighted towards the bigger ships, by which I mean above 10,000 TEU. Whereas if you look at the sub 10,000 TEU order book, which again is predominantly where all of us on this panel are focused, the order book to fleet ratio is much lower. I don't have the number exactly to hand at the moment, but I think it's, sort of 12, 13%, which is much more digestible. And given that it's going to be delivering over the course of the next 3 to 4 years, because if you were to order a book to a ship today, it would only come onto the water in 2029 or so. So you have to consider the sort of the effect of timing on the delivery of additional capacity into the market. And then picking up on a point that Evangelos made earlier, because very little capital has actually been flowing into the mid-size and smaller fleet over the last decade or so, it means you have an aging peer group. Now, if you've got older ships competing against older ships, so what, in a way? It's the better specified ships that will survive, which is why I say we expect the ships that we've just acquired to be lucratively re-employed when they come off their existing charters. But if you also look at the upper end of the age group, by which I mean 25 years and more, you've got roughly 6.5% of the existing fleet on the auto, on the water today that is going to hit 25 years or older over the course of the next 3 to 4 years. So there could be a significant downsizing, a flexing down in capacity, in the event that demand and supply dynamics do indeed soften for the mid-size and smaller sector. So there's room for correction and earnings protection on both sides, I would say.
Thank you, Thomas. And Evangelos, do you agree with Thomas that the smaller sizes are more protected from this order book? I mean, I have tried to get my head around what the word cascading means in this context, because you repeatedly hear it that even the smaller vessels will not be spared from the delivery of the larger order book. But Thomas was pretty clear in his view. What do you think?
Yeah, first of all, one is very fortunate if he speaks after Thomas, because Thomas is usually very complete in his answers. So he has given you all of the background. So let me add, and of course you're right. You have the big ships and the small and the medium to smaller ships, but there will always be cascading, right? The cascading effect, and it may not be one to one. But we will see medium to low to smaller sizes being pressured by the delivery of the larger ships as the liners redesign networks and so on and so forth. Now, 15 years ago, the order book was at 60%, 60. So if you know, because I you know, you said it's a big order book. Well, it has been double what it is today. That's point number one, just to put it into perspective. Point number two is that it is delivering over the next, let's say, 4 years, during which period you will have demand that will catch up. I cannot predict exactly what the demand growth will be, but we expect it to be positive and at least 1 times world GDP growth. And also, you have what is going for this industry is the retirement of the big chunk of older ships that Thomas mentioned, and also slow steaming. And again, we've seen speeds go up during the Suez Canal disruption era. There is considerable scope for speeds coming down. So if you add all the supply mitigants, if you wish, into the equation, this is not such a, you know, we're not, there is, we are in no way, in our view, headed towards a cliff, right? We may see charter rates correcting. This is something that, you know, we are in a cyclical industry, and it's natural that it at some point it will happen. But at the same time, we are in an era where the fleet needs to be modernized. You have emissions requirements and other requirements that push the industry to be renewed. And therefore, you know, we expect, unless we have unforeseen events affecting the industry, we will have a decent next few years, especially for companies like us and the fellow panelists, that we already have very high charter cover percentages. This is very important. You know, we are not subject to short-term fluctuations in charter rates.
Thank you.
Sigurd, could I make, sorry, 2 points in response to Evangelos there, and also picking up on your cascade point? Cascading is a fact of life in the industry, has been since the very beginning. You know, there's been an upsizing of tonnage deployed on various trades since, you know, time zero in shipping. However, what is talked about less is the reverse cascade. So if we look back at the last time that there was a genuinely serious demand shock to the industry to the downside, what we actually saw was a reverse cascading of smaller ships into the trades previously served by larger ships. Why? Because the lines wanted to synthetically tighten capacity. So a combination of blanking of sailings and the deployment of smaller ships on previously trades served by larger ships. So that's one thing to keep in mind. The cascade does not always move in one direction. And the second thing is that trade patterns are changing. You know, I'm sure you listened into the Maersk earnings call where they were talking about the transformation of trade patterns driven principally by China looking to diversify their export markets. And volumes had grown explosively out of China into Africa and into Latin America. Those trades require mid-size and smaller ships, not the really big mainline traders. And also, there's diversification within the Southeast Asian trades, where the US, for example, is looking to diversify away from China. So all of this is making the supply chain much less efficient. If you make the supply chain less efficient, you need more ships to carry the same amount of cargo. And typically, the more fragmented it becomes, you need smaller ships to carry the same volume of cargo. That, those were the two, 2 points.
Thank you, Thomas. Okay, let's just we have a few questions in the Q&A that we should address, but I just want to talk briefly about new buildings first. For the Fearnleys new build brokers, I've just spoken to one of them, and they don't really see ordering stopping anytime soon. And they do not expect prices to change much going forward either. So they're seeing a continued high level price level. And there's apparently still a huge appetite for modern eco tonnage. And focus rather seems to be on actually getting the deliveries as 2028 slots are almost sold out. So, but it's congratulations on MPC's new build orders earlier this fall. Do you want to, and I urge you to keep it a little bit brief. Tell us a little bit about the process leading up to this deal and how your counterparty prioritized in those negotiations.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to do so. I think, you know, but before getting into the detail on our deals, I think generally speaking, there's two types of people chasing, in particular, feeder new builds. One being, you know, people having deep pockets and taking a speculative stance on the market, which, you know, looking at the supply demand dynamics that we, you know, discussed at length from a mid to long term perspective, makes a lot of sense. And then there's people like us that are, you know, it's obviously not our money. We're managing somebody else's money, so we might take a bit more conservative stance on the market, especially on the investment side. Meaning we wouldn't be ordering speculative. So we have and will always do order vessels in a combination with long-term charters. For us, long-term charters is anything north of 3 years. It has been, you know, in particular on the first half of the year, it has been particularly challenging to combine new building contracts at the same time with what we believe is meaningful cash flow visibility. But then obviously the momentum has changed for the reasons that we have discussed. Liner companies have also proactively, you know, changed their focus a bit from continuously ordering on the larger size, also focusing rightfully so a bit more on the smaller size, because that subsegment has been overlooked for too long. And I think we as a company have done a decent job as in positioning ourselves as one of these strategic partners, especially in the feeder segment for liners. And that's why we have been successful in both, you know, winning two tenders with longer term time charters of 8 to 10 years, but also constructing interesting deals with maybe a bit less cash flow visibility, but retaining some of the upside that we strongly believe is in the feeder segment. And when looking at the individual investment case, and you know, we all know that liner tenders for new builds that they're usually thinly priced, and it becomes a bit of an financial engineering exercise. But the way we approached those 8 to 10 year time charters is essentially looking at, you know, what is new building pricing today, where has it been historically, and what is the residual risk that you take at the end of the charter. And you know, if you look at the 8 to 10 year time charter, you basically have no risk left if you take into account also the what is the recycling value. What it's a completely unrealistic case, given you have the most modern assets in the specific segments that are only, you know, 7, 8, and 10 years old, and you're basically creating these assets age adjusted at 50 to 60% discount at what we think is new building parity. So you have a super strong de-risking, and you have a massive upside, and that's why we're not a strong believer in the you have to show a 20% levered IRR after 10 years, because we know how volatile shipping can be. We just want to make sure to construct a future-proof portfolio of assets in the feeder segment. And if we feel comfortable with the residual risk, and that also means break even in the foreseeable future, then we'll be able to sail through whatever market there is in the next couple of years. And at the same time, ensuring that we will sail into the next massive upswing that will certainly come. Again, especially look at the dynamics on the supply side. You have in the smaller sizes, you have an overaged fleet. You have a small order book, and Tom just referred to two markets that we're also focused on with our vessels, being Latin America and also some of the emerging markets in Asia, where you see massive growth rates. So I think you know, there's certainly a constructive case for the feeder market, and by ordering now, we obviously, I mean, needless to say, we're working on the fleet renewal, which is necessary. Regulatory pressure is increasing. Yes, IMO net zero has not been voted on, but it doesn't mean that the regular pressure will become less. So making sure our vessels will be compliant in the foreseeable future. And most importantly, making a financially feasible and viable investment, and keeping as much upside as possible, and not locking yourself away for the usual 15-20 year time charter that you see on the very large vessels. And that's also why we have been, opting for a staggered employment profile on the order book of between 3, 7, 8, and 10 years, to keep as much optionality as possible.
All right, thank you. Let's move over to the Q&A. We have a question here. With strong balance sheets among listed tonnage providers and pressure building on smaller owners, do you expect the next phase of the market to be defined by consolidation? And is there a future for small companies with older tonnage? And I suggest, if there's someone else who strongly wants to take it, I suggest Adam go ahead and give that a go.
Definitely the way that the market is developing, the way that conditions in the world are developing, with new regulations, with more complex events around the world, the smaller companies are at a disadvantage. The older tonnage as well in the container market is very inefficient compared to the new buildings that we see today. And that will definitely play a role if the market turns south. I'm not sure that these 25-year-old ships can survive a downturn in the market. So I don't know if there will be consolidation, but I feel that the smaller owners with older tonnage are at a disadvantage. On the other hand, they've been around for a while. They've been resilient and resourceful. So many of them could well survive.
Understand. Thank you. And then we have a few questions. I guess that we're sort of addressed the cascading phenomenon. And one of them is, how real is the argument that many ports cannot accommodate 10,000 TEU plus ships due to size and water depth and other handling issues? Anyone wants to share some thoughts on that? Is there a real barrier for the larger vessels to enter the feeder trades or the smaller ship trades?
Yeah, I'm happy. Sorry, Tom. I'm happy, and then you can chime in and hopefully support my my thesis. So the simple answer is yes. So for the time being, you sure have physical restrictions in all sorts of ports around the world. But what we see as well, that there is an increasing CapEx program being initiated as we speak. So, but we all know if a port facility is not being rigged up in 2 to 3 years, unless you're in China. So it will take time for the new infrastructure to come into place and be operational, and then also allowing larger vessels to operate in the feeder trades, for example. So currently the feeder trades, 99% of all the vessels deployed are 5,500 and smaller. So you have a few larger vessels sailing in, but we make the argument in the foreseeable future that sort of 5,500 will grow to 8,000. So naturally, you will see in the future larger vessels also coming into the feeder trades. But interestingly, taking some specific examples on port capacity and infrastructure, Shanghai is currently the biggest port globally. They turn around 50 million TEU per annum. They're right now building a new quay of 4.5 kilometers, adding 12 million TEU in the next 2 years, which is incredible. At the same time, entire country of India, they have an annual throughput of 20 million TEU. And at the same time, they have the same or a larger population of China, and they have obviously an increasing expenditure on finished goods. So there's a massive potential for growing infrastructure, and we have also seen there the recently announced maritime ambitions of becoming a superpower, which also entails infrastructure spending. So also their port infrastructure will certainly improve in the foreseeable future, but it will not happen in a meaningful way in the next, let's call it, 3, 4, 5 years. So in that period, we don't expect a massive cascading in certain areas that are just physically restricted to discharge and load container vessels of a certain size. And sorry, Tom. I mean, now it's your turn to disagree or agree.
No, I agree. I agree 100%. But what I would also add is that it's not just about port infrastructure. So to use the aviation analogy again, you wouldn't deploy an A380 on the shuttle run between New York JFK and Boston. Why? Because you couldn't fill it. So you have to match the size of the vessel to the volume that's being moved between ports. So there are two constraints, really. One is the infrastructure limitations point that that Moritz has already addressed, but the other, crucially, is the commercial point. How many containers can you actually get into a ship to make it economically viable on a given trade? And the other final point I would make is that Moritz, you probably have more up-to-date information than I on this, but the last time I looked, between 35 and 40% by number, so not by capacity, but by number of ships on the water today are actually of 2,000 TEU or smaller. So there's an awful lot of incremental cascading to take place at the bottom end of the size scale. It's not simply a question of displacing 24,000 TEU ships into 18,000 TEU vessel trades and 18,000 going into 16 or 13,000, blah, blah, blah. The cascading is a live thing that runs along the size scale. So you wouldn't necessarily want to be at the very bottom of the cascade, but as long as you can displace your smallest chart tonnage into other smaller tonnage provider trades, you're in decent shape.
Thank you very much, Thomas. And I believe we have spent our 45 allocated minutes and then some. So I believe that will be the last word this time around. Thank you all for an interesting discussion and your insights. Very much appreciated.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.